For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is November the 12th. We're in Shmuel Beis. We're in Perek Tes, chapter 9. Here we're going to have an interesting interlude in the storyline. And it's a short parak. It's only 13 psukim, only 13 verses. And this parak is actually going to lay the groundwork for a very significant episode that happens later on in Shmuel Beis. So we're gonna be introduced to a few new people, actually one new person in particular, in this parak, in this chapter. And the players in this particular parak will come up again later, and when we get to it later, we're going to have to draw from what we see in this parak. So this is going to seem fairly innocuous, but we're going to see later on that it actually has some very, very significant results based on what happens here. Vayomer David, David said, Hachiyash od asher no salavei shol. Is there anybody left from the house of Shaul, ve'aseimo chesed, I'll do with him kindness, ba'avur Yehonah's son. Because of Yehonah's son, my relationship with Yehonah's son, who was nifter, he passed away, he was killed, and I want to do chesed with somebody from the house, or some people from the house of Shaul, Shaul's descendants. Now, David knew that there were descendants of Shaul who remained. We were actually introduced to one of them before. Let's just review. Shaul had three sons who were killed with him on Har HaGilboa at the end of Shmuel Aleph. And he had a fourth son named Ish-bosheth who was crowned as king by Avner after Shaul and his three sons were killed. Ish-bosheth was eventually killed himself. He was assassinated. At that time, we were introduced also to Yehonasan's son. Anybody remember anything significant about Yehonasan's son?
He's lame.
Yeah. Right. That's right. His name is Mephibosheth. He's going to come up in this parak as well, as we'll see soon. There are more descendants of Shaul that are still alive. They will come up at the end of Shmuel Beis. We will see that there were some more descendants of Shaul who are still alive. However, if the family of Shaul at this point is not interested in being noticed, they were part of the ruling family that was essentially deposed. Ish-bosheth's reign was fraught with difficulty, and it just went downhill until he was killed. So they're keeping a low profile. So David says, I want to try to find someone from the family of Shaul and give chesed to that person. Why does David want to do chesed for the house of Shaul? He says, because of Yehonah's son. That's my relationship with Yehonah's son. I want to do that. Ulevein Shaul Eved Ushmo Tziva. The house of Shaul had a slave, and the slave's name was Tziva. Vayikru lo el David. They called him to David. Vayomer Melech Elav, and the king said to him, Ha'atot Tziva, are you Tziva? Vayomer Avdecha. He says, I'm your servant. I mean, I'm ready to do whatever you want. Whatever you want me to do, I'm your servant. Which is the correct way to answer the king when he asks you if you're around or you're available or whatever it is. Now, a word about slaves. Those of you who attend Sunday night, we've talked about this before, but a word about slaves, the halachos of slaves, the laws of slaves in the Torah. Tziva was an Eved Kenani, which means he was a non-Jewish slave. A non-Jewish slave, once he becomes owned by a Jew, which could happen in a number of different ways, but once he is owned by a Jew, he becomes obligated in mitzvos the same as a woman is obligated in mitzvos, which means that he's obligated in all the lavin, all the prohibitions, and in all of the says, the commandments, that are not zman grama, that are not time-bound. A slave is also exempt from time-bound commandments. But all the significant thing here is that he is definitely obligated in all the law and all the prohibitions. Can't eat non-kosher food. He's got to keep Shabbos. He's got to, all the whatever, all those, all the arayos, all of the illicit relationships. He's just as obligated as a full-fledged Jew. An Eved Kenani, a non-Jewish slave owned by a Jew, is property, and therefore, when the owner of the slave dies and his property is then inherited by the closest relative, a slave would be inherited as well. Also, the rule with a slave, a non-Jewish slave we're talking about, an Eved Kenani, is that whatever the slave acquires is owned by the owner of the slave. Masha kana Eved, kana Rava. Whatever is acquired by the slave is now owned by the owner of the slave. That's the rule. So Tziva is this slave of Shaul's household. When Shaul and his sons and Ishbosheth are all killed, so the question is, where was Tziva? Where did he go? What did he do? Who now is going to, who has responsibility for him, etc.? It seems from the way that the Navi presents Tziva that Tziva was currently operating independently, meaning that even though legally he was still owned by Shaul's family, but there is no one, it seems, who has taken responsibility for Tziva. So he's living, perhaps he's got a job and he's making money, whatever, but he is legally owned by Shaul's family. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomer HaMelech, the king said, Ha'efes od ish l'beis Shaul, is there any more a person, a man from the house of Shaul, Ve'etze imo chesed elokim, I will do with him the kindness of Hashem. Vayomer Tziva el HaMelech, Tziva said to the king, Od bein liYehonah's son, there is still a son for Yehonah's son, Nechei ragloyim, he is lame of both legs. Vayomer lo HaMelech, so the king said to him, Epho, who, where is he? Vayomer Tziva el HaMelech, Tziva said to the king, Hinehu beis Machir ben Amiel, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, below Devar, in a place called Lo Devar. That's where he is. Vayishlach HaMelech David, the king sent for him. Vayikachehu, he took him, he beis Machir ben Amiel, Milo Devar. He took him from the house of Machir ben Amiel, from Lo Devar. Vayavo Mephibosheth ben Yehonah's son, ben Shaul el David. Mephibosheth, the son of Yehonah's son, the son of Shaul, came to David. Vayipol aponav, and he fell on his face, vayishtachu, he bound to the ground. Vayomer David, Mephibosheth, David said Mephibosheth, Vayomer hinei abdecha, behold your servant. So he says, whatever you want, I'm here for you. Vayomer lo David, David said to him, Al tira, don't be afraid. You see that David anticipated that anybody from Shaul's household would have reason to be afraid, not knowing what David was going to do. Perhaps David would feel that there still is a threat from the house of Shaul, and therefore they need to be removed. So David says, don't be afraid.
He tried to kill him for years.
Yep. I am going to do with you chesed bavur Yehonah son Avicha because of Yehonah son your father. And I will return to you as kol sedei Shaul Avicha, all the fields of Shaul your father. You will eat bread on my table all the time. You will now be a permanent guest, a permanent fixture in my household at my table. I'm going to take you in. And I'm going to give you back all of Shaul's fields. Now, it is a little bit of a problem over here. What do you mean I'll give you back his fields? If Mephibosheth is the living heir, then the fields are automatically his. They're legally his. So that's a technical problem, which we'll discuss hopefully before the end of tonight. Vayishtachu, and he bowed. Vayomer, and he said, Me'avdecha, what is your servant? And who am I? Kifanisa el hakelav hamesa asher kamoni, that you've turned to this dead dog like me. And he speaks of himself in a disparaging manner. He says, who am I that you're paying any attention to me? Vayikra hamelech al tziva. So now the king called to tziva nar shol, the lad of shol, meaning the slave of shol. Vayomer lev, he said to him, kol asher hayal shol l'chol beiso, all that belonged to shol and all of his household, nasati leven adonecha, I've given it to the son of your master, to Mephibosheth. You shall serve, you shall work for him the land. Ata uvanecha vavodecha, you and your children and your slaves. Vehivesa, and you shall bring, meaning you shall bring all of the produce from the land. Lechem va'achalo, and it will be for the son of your master as bread, and he will eat it. Umefivoshes ben adonecha. And Mephibosheth, the son of your master, Yochel Tomid Lechem al Shulchani, will always eat bread at my table. Period. That's the end of what David said to Tziva. So David's saying to Tziva, the land I am giving to Mephibosheth, you are a slave of the family, therefore you are now going to also be part of this. You're now going to be working this land for Mephibosheth. Ulet Tziva, Chamisha Asar Banim. Tziva had 15 sons, the Esrim Avanim, and 20 slaves. So Tziva is a pretty significant commodity because he himself has 15 sons and 20 slaves. So that is now being given over to Mephibosheth. Tziva said to the king, anything the king, my master, says to his servant, so your servant will do. And then the king said, he repeated, Mephibosheth will eat at my table like one of the sons of the king. So not only will he be at my table, he's going to be like a prince. He's going to be like from the royal family. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micha. And all of the standing of the household of Tziva were now slaves to Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth yoshev b'Yerushalayim. Mephibosheth dwelled in Yerushalayim. Ki al shulchan ha-melech tamid hu ochel, for he was eating constantly at the king's table. V'hu fiseach shtei raglav, and he was lame in both his legs. End of the parak, end of the chapter, and for now the end of the story. Again, apparently a rather innocuous interlude, it seems unimportant interlude in the story. Now, there's a lot of little details we have to get clear in this parak, but before we do that, let's just point out the one very significant, I don't know if you call it a lesson, if you call it information that we're getting from this story, which is not unimportant, which anybody who reads this parak would notice. It is that David, instead of taking revenge against Shaul's family, instead of, if he's not going to kill them, at least make sure that they are paupers, that they are unimportant people, that they should be considered degraded as a family. Instead of doing that, David is specifically elevating the status of the son of Yehonah's son. He sought a member of Shaul's family specifically to do this, and he not only gives him all the lands that he's supposed to have and the slave he's supposed to have, so he returns to him his wealth, his parnasa. He brings him into his own house and his own palace, and more than that, he actually makes him a member of the royal family. The last thing that anybody would do when there's a rival line, when there's a rival, a rival family which could vie for the throne, the last thing you would do is take that person and actually make them part of your own royal family, other than through marriage. But to actually just put him at the table and say, okay, you're now one of us. So here you see how magnanimous David was with Shaul's family, David is consistent in this way, that he's never made this a personal thing between him and Shaul. It's never been personal. It's always been HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's always been what Hashem wants. As we know, we've seen this over and over and over again. And here, David, because of Yohanan's son, because of his relationship with Yohanan's son, because of Yohanan's son's own greatness, David says that the proper thing to do is to take Yohanan's son and give him status in the country. Yeah.
I don't know. I hope this is not dishonorable, but it's a two-sided thing. On one side, what was his opposition will be under his eyes all the time.
True.
So it's a political move on one side, but it's merciful on the other side. Were you allowed to think like that?
Yeah, you're allowed to think like that, except that here, you could think like that, but the Navi tells us the reason. We don't have to guess.
He says
explicitly, I'm going to do chesed because of Yonasan.
So, but a king could do that because...
Yeah, but then the Navi would have...
That would be totally under his control.
It's true, but the Navi would have told us that.
Okay.
Here, the Navi took it... The Navi made it a point to tell us the reason.
Yeah. Where was that? I didn't
know. The very first pasuk.
About David, we say, David Melch Yisrael Chai B'Kayam.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't say that about anybody.
That's
else.
Correct. That's right.
I'm not saying that David wasn't saying, I want to do something nice for someone in Shaul's family, but when you see somebody who's lame in two legs, all of a sudden they're not such a threat about taking over the kingship, probably.
Yes.
So then to say, ah, now you'll sit like a king at my table, which he doesn't say until after he sees him, it's not as magnanimous. If he had said it before he saw him and realized he was lame, I would give it more credence. So I don't know if that's
okay. Well, it is correct that we learned before that Mephibosheth was, we already knew that he was lame. We learned it back in the fourth Parak, I believe is where it was, and over there we pointed out the reason why the Navi says it over there is to show that Shaul's family was no longer a threat to the throne.
If I hear that someone's lame, I could think that they're mildly lame, and then when I see that it's both legs, it's a whole different, different impact.
Fair point. Yeah.
Why is David HaMelech doing this now?
Okay, that is really the main question, but we're going to tackle everything else first and get to that last.
How does a servant get a servant?
And that's one of the technical points we have to cover. How does a servant get a servant? Let's take this in order. So David wants to do chesed because of Yohanan's son. Now, that doesn't mean that David is specifically looking for Yohanan's son's son. He's looking for someone from the house of Shaul. It seems like he was fortunate that the person he found was actually Yohanan's son's son. But it could have been Yonasan's nephew that he could have found.
Women left out? Where are all the wives and the daughters? I mean, they didn't go to war, so they were still alive, most likely.
Okay. Okay.
So why are we, and you're mentioning nephews, not nieces. Why are women
I don't think he would have given status like this to a woman. I don't think he would have put a woman under, you know.
No, he might not have given status, but he might have said, okay, I know your husband's dead, you're no longer part of the royal family, you were living in such style, and now you're in poverty.
I don't know.
Taking care of them.
Two questions.
That's still a kindness.
He's only picking one to be kind to.
What?
He's only picking one to be kind to. He couldn't be kind to all the
women. Well, I don't know. Maybe he's looking for somebody.
He's got enough wealth to be kind to them all.
Yeah, he's looking. I mean, if he would have found more than one, could be he would have been kind to. Well, I mean, I'm not sure.
The fact that the Navi pointed out that David is showing kindness to someone means that it's something honorable, not just his... the fact that he's lame.
That's true. It's Lewis really alluded to that. The fact that David is trying to do chesed is irrespective of who he finds and whether the person is lame or not. She just pointed out that when he puts him at the table, we only find that out after the discovery that he's lame. So it's a point. Now he finds Tziva. Tziva seems to have been a known entity. Seems like it was known there was this man called Tziva who was a slave to the house of Shaul, and he calls him and then he says, I want to do chesed. David says this, he tells him, David plays his cards, he doesn't hide it. He says, I want to do chesed for the house of Shaul. Who's left? So Tziva says to the king, Pasuk Gimel, there's still a son for Yohanan's son who is lame. Now, is Tziva trying to... Why is he telling him, there's a son to Yohanan's son who is lame?
Yeah.
why not? This is Santi Yonah's son. He's a doctor. He's a lawyer. He's lame. What? Because he's not. Okay. Tell me something. He's lame. The king then says to him, where is he? He's in the house of Machir ben Amiel in Lo Devar. Was the king? The king said to Tziva in Pasuk Gimel, is anybody left so I can do chesed? Tziva says, oh yeah, there's this son to Yonatan. His name is, there's a son to Yonatan. I didn't even say his name. This is, Yonatan has a son. He's lame. Where is he? Some more information?
Why is serving him?
Some more information, please. Right? The king has to say to him, and where is he? He's at the house of Machir ben Amiel in Lo Devar.
He didn't think he was worth anything, so why would David want to find him?
Siva is not interested in this chesed that David's about to do. Siva sees what's going on over here. Siva was no dummy. And he's not interested in this happening. Look at the next pasuk. So the king says to him, where is he? So he says he's in the house of Machir ben Amiel in Lo Devar, below Devar. And look at the next pasuk. The king sent for him and took him from the house of Machir ben Amiel from me, Lo Devar. The Gemara tells us that even though this word Lo Devar, the first it says below Devar, then it says me, Lo Devar. So the literal meaning is in Lo Devar. He was in Lo Devar, and the king took him from Lo Devar. The Beis is a prefix, and the Mem is a prefix. So he's in Lo Devar, and he took him from Lo Devar. The Gemara tells us that there's much more going on over here. That Siva was saying, you see, Lo Devar, if you can read it as Lo with an Aleph, which means none or zero or no, Devar, nothing. He is below Devar. He is with nothing. Meaning, he is not valuable. The king went and took him Milo Devar, or as the Gemara says, Male Devar, full of something. What thing are we talking about, says the Gemara? Was he a Talmud Chacham or not? Siva said to the king, yes, he's lame. King said, where is he? He's in the house of Machir ben Amiel. He knows no Torah. Below Devar. He has nothing. He's worthless. He doesn't know any Torah. The king sent for him and discovered Male Devar. He's full of something. He's a massive Talmud Chacham. You will recall that when Mephibosheth was first introduced to us back in Perek Dalet, I believe is where it was, I told you then a startling fact about Mephibosheth, that he is, or will become, anybody remember? The Rebbe of David HaMelech. Mephibosheth is going to become the Rebbe of David HaMelech. He didn't just know Torah. He knew a ton of Torah. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. David HaMelech is the greatest Talmud Chacham, the greatest sage of his generation. We talked about back then the importance of everybody having a Rebbe. Even the greatest Talmud Chacham has to have somebody who he answers to. And David makes Mephibosheth his Rebbe. So Mephibosheth is not, it's not just that he knew a little bit more than Siva alluded to. Siva says he knows nothing. You don't want to deal with him. He just doesn't know anything. He's an Amaretz. And it turns out, just the opposite is true. Mephibosheth is not just learned. He's really learned. In fact, he's so learned that he's a person that David can turn to and say, you're going to be my Rebbe. And the Gemara says that David HaMelech lowered himself to Mephibosheth, and whenever he would paskin anything, he would say, Mephibosheth, my Rebbe, did I rule correctly? I said it was Tameh, is that correct? I said it was Tar, is that correct? He would always ask Mephibosheth to corroborate David's own opinion. So we're talking about someone, a Talmud Chacham of the highest caliber. But Siva is trying to hide that. So we already now have an insight into what's going on over here. David is not simply looking to do chesed as a way of, well, I want to show that I like them or I feel bad for them. It's because of Yohanan's son. What do you mean because of Yohanan's son? You remember that Yohanan's son was also a Talmud Chacham of the highest order. And David and Yohanan's son's relationship was completely about Torah. David was able to grow in Torah because of Yohanan's son. Yohanan's son was able to grow in Torah because of David. The two of them were able to grow together in their Torah. When David lost Yohanan's son, he lost a significant part of his own ability to thrive in his understanding of Torah.
Wow.
David says, I want to find someone from Shaul's family because of Yohanan's son. I want to do chesed with that person. David was looking for a Talmud Chacham. Now, whether David was looking for a Rebbe, maybe, maybe not. I don't know if he was actually looking for a Rebbe, but he's looking for somebody like that. Siva understands that once David finds someone from Shaul's family that's worthy of being in an elevated status, then the game is up for Tziva. We'll talk about what the game is in a minute. So Tziva doesn't want this. So Tziva is not interested. You don't want him. He's lame. Tziva didn't say it as a, oh, he's lame. You want to help him out. That wasn't what it was. He said, you don't want him. He's not important. You don't want him. He was saying it in a disparaging manner. And then when the king pushed him further, he outright lied. He outright lied. He said, the man is an Amoritz.
He did lie twice.
Well, I mean, he was lame. That was true.
No, I mean, he
yeah.
wasn't a nobody.
He, right. He lied. That's what I'm saying. He lied about
number
that.
Number one. And number two, he lied about the other thing.
No, this is what he lied about. This is it. He lied about this point. Just one second. Now, what game is Tziva trying to avoid? So, Tziva is a slave. And the rule is, as we mentioned before, that a slave is like property. So that means that when his master, Shaul, and Shaul's sons were killed, whoever is the rightful heir now inherits Tziva. But if the heirs are all keeping a low profile, and Tziva was a known entity, people knew that Tziva was a slave of Shaul's house. Well, that puts Tziva in a great position, because no one is stepping forward to officially take ownership of Tziva. Tziva seems to have been a personality. Tziva seems to have been someone who people knew about. And everybody's in the shadows. No one wants to step forward. So Tziva now has free reign. So Tziva, therefore, acted, for all intents and purposes, like a free man.
Right.
Because no one was thinking, there's no prohibition against him acting like a free man. I mean, there's no one's out to hold him down. It's not, the laws aren't there to keep him from becoming educated, from taking a job. He can do whatever he wants. It's just that legally, all of his assets are owned by his master. But if his master is out to lunch, his master is going to play golf, he can do whatever he wants. So here his master, whoever it was in hiding or keeping a low profile. So Tziva has apparently a business. He's got 15 sons. He owns 20 slaves. He bought himself some slaves. He had money. Anybody with money can buy a slave. He bought 20 slaves. Now, the fact is, all his money is really Shaul's family's money, and anything he does with the money is really Shaul's family's things, but no one has taken ownership of Tziva. Tziva likes it that way, and he sees that if David is going to promote a descendant of Shaul, Tziva's done. He's not going to go back to his old position as being the slave of the family, which may not have been a terrible way to be, but it's certainly not independence. And Tziva doesn't want that.
Could he keep the inheritance? Could he? If he could keep all whatever was good.
Could who keep?
Tziva.
Well, Tziva's a slave. I mean, money he's making.
If nobody had claimed it, and Mephibosheth was not found, could he have?
Well, I don't know about inheritance, but whatever he himself,
yeah,
whatever money he made,
he would
just do whatever he wanted. No one was going to stop him.
Didn't Shaul have land and all the rest?
So it doesn't seem like Tziva took the land, because that already he had no right to. It's not his land.
But if nobody claims it.
Doesn't matter. It's not his land. It's Shaul's family's land. Everybody knew it was Shaul's family's land. So Tziva doesn't want this to happen. But when David discovers that in fact Mephibosheth is this incredible Talmud Chacham, David makes Mephibosheth his own Rebbe, and he now restores Mephibosheth to the position of the family of Shaul. So now, what happened to all the fields of Shaul? So that is unclear, because it says here that David says, I'm going to give you back all the land. What do you give you back? So there's it's not clear exactly who was on that land. Now, several things could have happened. I saw one opinion, the Radak understands, that since Shaul's family was, in a certain sense, treasonous, rebellious towards David, even though they weren't really, because they were acting with Hashem's word, but they were at odds with David. So the rule is that if a family is if a person is treasonous, then first of all, the punishment is death, and second of all, his assets go to the king. That's part of the punishment for being treasonous. So this is going to come up in a very significant way in Malachim with Achav. Those of you who are aware of who Achav was, he was a Rasha, but this is a big deal with Achav that he specifically has somebody accused of being a rebellious person, so that, because he wants the guy's land. That's what he wants to do. So he hasn't been accused of that. So I saw the Radak wants to say that David actually had possession of Shaul's lands. But for some reason, the difficulty in that is they have to explain why didn't he take possession of Tziva. Because if he took possession of Shaul's lands, then he should have taken possession of Tziva as well, which it does not seem that he did. I'm not going to argue with the Radak. I would say that another possibility is that that the lands were just sitting around, and they were squatters. People were just there. They knew it was Shaul's family's land, but no one was there, so no one's there. I'm going to set up shop myself. You know, someone throws me out, somebody throws me out. But for the time being, no one's there, so I'll hang around on the land, or I'll work the land, I'll do whatever I want with the land. No one's there to throw me out. David says, I'm going to restore all the lands to you, Mephibosheth. And David goes, and he says, all this land that was once Shaul's family's land, it is now Mephibosheth's land. Tziva is now going to be working this land like he did before, him and his descendants. Tziva's slaves are now Mephibosheth's slaves. Everything is now belongs to and is being operated by Mephibosheth. Yeah.
Weren't they afraid? I mean, you've got Tziva who's upset. He's got 15 sons who went from like freedom and I can marry and, you know.
No, they can't marry. They everybody knew their legal status. There's
okay,
a legal status.
So they could marry, but yeah, they could get their own wealth and everything, right?
Right.
So you're going to have 16 angry guys working for you. That's not such a happy situation.
Okay.
I mean,
so we're going to see later on that Tziva is going to seek revenge over here.
Okay.
Tziva is going to seek revenge. Now, it's not going to be
over.
No, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's true. It's not going to be over, but it's also not going to be
mutiny.
No, it's not going to be violent. Uh-huh. It's not going to be violent. Tziva is smarter than that, and he's going to do it in a nonviolent manner. And David is going to be drawn into this web. And that's going to be a problem later on. There's going to be an issue later on involving Tziva, Mephibosheth, and David. And we'll see that, but it's not going to be for a while. It's going to be a while till we get there. We're going to have to refer back to
the seeds here.
Yeah,
but they get 16 angry.
That's what I mean. It's not innocuous. And you're reading it through. Oh, it's a nice thing. He's doing chesed. Oh, not beautiful, right? But what's going on is much more important than that. There's a lot happening over here that's really very, very significant.
Does his status go? Does he go free after 7 years
of Jubilee? No, not a non-Jewish slave. That's only a Jewish slave. A Jewish slave owned by a Jew goes free after 6 years. A non-Jewish slave is forever.
Okay.
Unless he's given freedom, unless he's actively let free, it's forever. Him, his sons, grandson, forever and ever.
And never automatic when the person, the owner, dies.
That's right. And you had situations where you had generations of slaves for generations of one family, constantly.
Can they convert to Judaism and make a real conversion?
If they are let free.
Oh, wow.
As long as they're slaves, then that's their status. When they are let free, they become full-fledged Jews.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go back to being non-Jews.
Huh.
If they're let free, they're full-fledged Jews.
If they do that, I think they cannot continue to live with their wives that they had when they were slaves. Right?
Well, so that's an issue of... Right, right.
Well, it also depends if the slave wife was set free because if she was gifted to him her children still belong to the owner.
Sorry, it was a bargain.
Yeah.
It's messy.
Yeah. Now, complicated. Now, so this is Mephibosheth, who is the who is this person that we're talking about, who becomes the Rebbe of David. Now, I want you to know we had Mephibosheth mentioned, this is when we first discussed this, it was back in Perek Dalid, in the fourth chapter, Perek Dalid, Pasuk Dalid, chapter 4, verse 4. He was mentioned there, and that's when we first discussed this point about Mephibosheth being the Rebbe of David.
Does Boshas mean something since we have
shame?
Ish,
yeah.
What does Mephi mean?
So Mephi would literally mean from the mouth of. Now, there is another Mephibosheth. We've had Ish-bosheth, who is the son of Shaul. We now have Mephibosheth, who is the grandson of Shaul, son of Yehonasan, who is the son of Shaul. There is another Mephibosheth, who we will have much later on in Shmuel Beis, who is the son of Shaul from a Pelegish, from a concubine. That's another person named Mephibosheth. I saw today, it threw me off, because I saw today that there is an opinion that the Rebbe of David is not this Mephibosheth, but rather the other Mephibosheth. Is it the grandson of Shaul, or is it the son of Shaul from the Pelegish, from the concubine?
Which
one? There's a Tosfos that says that it's the other Mephibosheth. The Rashi and the Radak both understand that it's this Mephibosheth. We're going to just assume it's this one, at least for now. We're going to presume it's this one, which fits in very well with the theme over here of David discovering that he is a tremendous Talmud Chacham and that it is on behalf of Yehonasan and that David is acting over here. So we're going to presume it's this one. So if it's the other one is around also. Somehow David comes in contact with him, but we don't find out about him until much later. So we're going to presume that it's this one based on Rashi and Radak. I just wanted, for fair disclosure, to let you know there is another opinion that it's the other Mephibosheth.
I don't recall you mentioning concubines. How many concubines did Shaul have?
We only know of this one. It was mentioned. It was mentioned that Siva. Her name was. What then? That's the first time we hear about Mephibosheth. We had her mentioned before as well, and I actually drew your attention to it because she is going to emerge as a very great tzaddikus, his concubine. Let me just find it where it was.
So how does a woman become a concubine, let's say, as opposed to a wife?
It's a marriage without a ksuba.
So why would a woman agree to that?
Because she doesn't have another husband.
So if a guy offers for her to become his concubine, she can't wait.
There's a big discussion about who's allowed to take a concubine. I believe the Rambam holds only a king can. No one else can. It wasn't rampant.
But Timnah was a concubine.
Yeah, that was before the Torah was given. That was to, and she was a concubine to Esav's son, Eliphaz. Yes. Yeah.
But didn't she first, doesn't the Medrash say she first went to Avraham?
And Avraham didn't want to marry her.
Right.
Yeah, so then she went to Esav.
But Hagar became a concubine, right? And you have...
Well, no, Hagar was a slave to Sarah, who then Sarah gave her to David, to Avram, to her husband, so that Hagar, it says that Sarah will be considered the mother of the children of Hagar, like you find with Bilhah and Zilpah.
Is Ishmael a slave then? Because if you're the son of the slave, you're a slave?
No, because it seems that Sarah let her free. So later on, Keturah is a Pelegish. Now Rashi says Keturah is Hagar.
Right.
Keturah is a Pelegish. So Avram does take a Pelegish at the end of his life. Yeah.
Is that for certain, or that
Vashti, there are other people who are named instead of Keturah and Hagar.
That's what Rashi is, a different opinion. Okay, now I'm just going to get you this name. We had her before. We had her before, and I'm sorry, just give me one more minute here.
In Aleph or Beis?
No, in Beis. In Shmuel Beis we had her. Yeah. It's, oh, I'm sorry, right. I should remember this. It's in Perek Gimel, in chapter 3, Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Ritzpa Bas Aya. Shaul had a Pilegesh. Her name was Ritzpa Bas Aya. And Ish-bosheth accused Avner of having had a relationship with Ritzpa Bas Aya. Remember, this was
right.
The falling out between Ish-bosheth and Avner, which precipitated Avner switching sides to David. So that was because of Ritzpa Bas Aya.
Where is that again?
In Perek Gimel, chapter 3, Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. So she's mentioned over there for the first time. She has a son named Mephibosheth, but he's not mentioned here. We won't get to him until much later on. She will also emerge, as I mentioned before, as a tzadeket, as a great righteous woman. We'll learn about her later on in Shmuel Beis.
How much time has since Shaul's death till now?
That's a good question.
Since he was 5 years old.
That was back then. I don't know how long it's been. I mean, it's been. We know that Ish-bosheth's reign was 7 years, and he's, you know, that's already passed. And now David wanted to build this and make this friend, and he was told no, and then he conquered all the lands around him. So we're moving along. I don't know exactly.
He was five
when he hurt himself.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know exactly how old he was. Okay, now at the end of the Perek, back where we are now, in Perek Tes, in chapter 9, so we're told a few more pieces of information, which, again, without all the backdrop we just discussed, wouldn't necessarily have mattered, but now it becomes more clear. So in Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, it says, Mephibosheth has a small son whose name is Micha. And all of the household of Tziva are now slaves to Mephibosheth. Why is it significant that Mephibosheth has a son whose name is Micha?
Well, the prophet Micha?
No, it's not the prophet, no. No, but but you see here that Tziva is looking at a permanent slavery.
Demotion,
right. Yeah. He's not getting out of this. It's not like he just has to outlast Mephibosheth, and then once Mephibosheth dies, well then, I'm back to my independent ways. Mephibosheth has a son named Micha. He's going to get up, grow up, and he'll marry and have children, and then this is it. We're back to the way we were before. My family, Tziva's family, is now slaves to Shaul's family. It's going to be ongoing. Pasuk Yigimel, verse 13, when Mephibosheth Yosheb Yerushalayim, he was dwelling in Yerushalayim. He wasn't dwelling on the fields of Shaul. Mephibosheth stayed in Yerushalayim. So now who's administering the fields? Well, it must be Tziva's administering the fields on behalf of Mephibosheth, but Mephibosheth isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be a direct master-slave relationship. Kiel Shulchan HaMelech Tamin Hu Ochel, for he is on the king's table all the time. V'viseach Shtei Raglav, and he was lame in both legs. Now, isn't that redundant? Tziva already told us back in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, that he was lame. Here, the emphasis is he was lame in both his legs. So, it's true he was lame, but the Navi wants to emphasize this. Now, we also know it from before, from back when Mephibosheth was first mentioned, back in Perek Daled. It also says that he was lame when he was dropped as a child. Right. But it doesn't emphasize lame in both legs. Here, it's he was lame in both legs, which means he can't walk. Nesir Raglaim could mean that he had trouble walking, but not necessarily couldn't walk at all. Right, right. Lame in both legs means that he is immobile. Why is that being stressed over here? This is the cliffhanger. This is going to be a major piece of information, a major part of the episode that's going to take place later on, when Siva tries to undo this this new arrangement, and he tries to manipulate Siva, Mephibosheth and David, and he will be to a certain extent successful. Part of what he's going to rely on is the fact that Mephibosheth can't walk at all, which means that Mephibosheth's ability to control Siva is limited, because he can't get around. He has to count on Siva to get him around. So we're going to see later that this is going to be very, very important, that Siva is going to be manipulative, and he's going to use Mephibosheth's handicap as part of the way of manipulating him. So we will see all of this later. I guess we can draw a conclusion that Siva is not a very nice person, but I don't know what that...
He's ambitious.
He's not happy with the new arrangement. He's going to do what he can to get around it, in a crafty way. He's a very crafty person.
Is that the first time we're hearing about him?
Siva? Yeah, this is the first time we're hearing about Siva. He'll come up again, but this is the first time we're hearing about him.
Does his name mean anything?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. I haven't thought about that.
I heard somewhere that the whole... Wait, what did you say? The name meant that he learned Torah so well that people were embarrassed to learn with him.
That's Mephibosheth. Not Siva. She was asking about Siva. It was Siva. Is that name? Okay. Now, the last point we have to tackle tonight is, why is this happening now? Why now? David, all of a sudden, just decides, I want to do chesed with the house of Shaul on behalf of Yohanan's son. What is this? I mean, it's a nice thing to do, and now that we understand even more, so he is looking for the Torah of Yohanan's son, the expression of the Torah of Yohanan's son, which he finds. But why now? Why now?
Well, he couldn't do it when he wasn't unified as king.
Right, that's true, but he's been for a while now. This is only after he's conquered all the other nations.
Right, you have to have peace. You can't do this during a time of war, could you?
Well, I guess, I don't know why not. This country was not under any threat. It wasn't like, you know.
But God told him to do that.
True, right? That's
so
true.
Why would you do your own wish before you finish God's wish?
Okay, okay. So you think take care of business first, then get to it. Then
I would think he would be taken to task if he did his own thing before God.
Okay, fair. That's a fair point. Yeah.
He's establishing his team. I mean, the first thing you would want to do, I'm guessing, is, you know, have a reliable Torah scholar.
Okay.
So you can,
okay, good.
You know,
good. So his administrative team is really being established. Okay, that's very good.
Knowing King Saul was a very big common partner in his family, that was a good place to search for.
Okay, good. Good. Now, David, when he consolidated his kingdom, says, I'm going to build the Beis HaMikdash. That was the last parak. I'm going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem tells Nathan, go to David immediately and stop him. He can't build the Beis HaMikdash. Not him. Rather, it's going to be his son. And two brothers ago, actually. It's going to be his son. And David, we know, reacted very favorably to this, even though he was disappointed he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash, but he was given a guarantee that his line will now continue forever, the Jews will continue forever, it's going to be your son.
Was it because he put so many wars?
Yeah, that's why he couldn't build it. Yeah. Now, David now, if he's not going to build the Beis HaMikdash, so what is he going to do? What is going to be the mission of his kingdom? If Hashem said, if the next step was build the Beis HaMikdash, but then Hashem says, you can't do it, your son is going to do it, so that's like, okay, David's kingdom is on hold. You know, basically, David, we're going to wait for you to die, and then your son will build the Beis HaMikdash when he's king. So So for now, until the rest of his life, it's just, we're just going to wait. I mean, that's obviously not, right? So clearly, David understood that it wasn't just that he couldn't do it, his son had to do it, but there was still more that had to be done prior to the Beis HaMikdash being built. It wasn't time yet. It was too early. Some other things had to happen. One thing that had to happen, which happened in Perek Zayin, in chapter chapter 8, was that all the nations around had to be subdued. And David now sets his agenda to make sure that there are no nations around Eretz Yisrael that can hold a candle to David and to his son Shlomo, who's not yet even born, who's not even married to Bathsheba yet. But that has to be done. And David, in Parakhas, he takes care of that. That took a long time. I don't know how long, but it's many, many wars. And David is constantly subduing everybody. He's also gathering great wealth, which we learned then also. What's the purpose of the wealth? For the Beis HaMikdash. He doesn't keep it for himself. He's not allowed to. Our kings are not allowed to enrich themselves. So what does he do? He gathers that all in for the Beis HaMikdash, to construct the Beis HaMikdash, to beautify the Beis HaMikdash. He's getting all that wealth. So he's laying the groundwork. Now there's another major, major step that has to take place in order for David's son to build the Beis HaMikdash. He has to have a son.
Right.
Now David has sons. David has sons. But we are going to learn later, when we get to the story of David and Bathsheba, which we're getting there. When we get there, we will learn that David knew that all of the sons he had currently were not the ones that would be the eventual successor to the throne who would build the Beis HaMikdash. He even knew that none of the wives he was married to were going to be the mother of the successor to the throne. That he knew. So he's got another order of business that has to get done, which is find the right woman, marry her, have a son from her, and then that son has to grow up, succeed David, and build the Beis HaMikdash. So he has to raise that son also to be the one who's going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So that's another order of business. But David realizes it's not time for that yet either. David first conquers all the lands around them. And he's not looking for this wife, this woman who's going to be the mother of the line of David HaMelech. He's not looking for her. He conquers everybody. Now, there's more that has to get done. So what else has to be done? So we have what happened, we learned tonight, which we'll talk about in a moment, and we have next week's discussion as well, not next week, excuse me, 2 weeks from now, because we're not meeting next week, but we're going to have one more interlude, which is going to be with the country of Ammon, which we'll talk about when we get there. So David here needs to do something as somehow preparing for the Beis HaMikdash. But preparing for the Beis HaMikdash means the step before finding the right wife to have the right son to raise to build the Beis HaMikdash. What does David need in order to be able to do that properly? David,
Navi.
What's that?
He needs a Navi.
He needs a Navi. He needs more than a Navi. He needs Torah.
Mm-hmm.
He needs a Rebbe. See, David needs, whether you're going to say,
he's got to work on himself.
He needs to put that, he himself is already great. We know David is huge.
Yeah, but
David recognizes that in order to embark on this next step, finding the right wife, having the right child, and raising that child, David knows that this next step of finding the right wife is going to be fraught with a great deal of temptation and the possibility of sin. When he ends up stumbling with Bathsheba, it's not that he didn't anticipate it. He did anticipate it, and he still stumbled, which we're going to talk about. That's really the unbelievable thing about what happens with Bathsheba, is that David knew that this was not going to be simple. David knew from the outset, even before he saw her, before anything happened, he knew that this was going to be a major, major internal battle for himself. And he still stumbled. In order to properly deal with that, David knows, I can't go down that road until I have a person in place who is at least a peer with me in Torah, and even better, that I can lower myself to make him into my Rebbe. And David seeks that out, knowing that the only other person who he ever felt could do that was Yehonah's son. David looks for a member of the family, because there's got to be somebody else. And he finds Mephibosheth, makes him into his Rebbe. So now that that's in place, now the next step can happen. Now we have one more perek before we get to Bathsheba. But this was an important step that had to happen in order to lay the groundwork for laying the groundwork for the Beis HaMikdash.
How did he know that Natan the prophet wasn't the one that should be his Rebbe?
I can't answer the question. I can't rank everybody in Torah over here. There's a Gemara where one of the sages lists all the other sages and says all of their strengths and learning. This one has an unbelievable memory, and this one has another. Lists the whole thing. So when we learned that, I was a bachur in yeshiva. We learned that, and one of my chavrusas said, "Who's the greatest of them all? The one who compiled the list, because he's able to know what each one is saying." So I can't rank people over here. All I know is that we just know from the fact that he didn't take Natan as his Rebbe that apparently he wasn't fit to be the Rebbe. I don't know why, but
okay, is there something to Yehonatan and Natan?
That's interesting. You know, okay, good. I don't know.
They're both
good point.
Gifts,
good point.
Right?
Good point. I never thought of that. Good point.
So it detracts from, it says at the beginning that he's doing it for a chesed, but it sounds like there's an ulterior motive.
Well, no, there's for sure, you're right, but the chesed is, you're right, it's for sure for an ulterior motive. The chesed is in order to find the Torah. If you want to become, make a drush out of it, Torah's chesed, he's looking to find that piece of the puzzle, that Torah that he needs.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.